You're listening to Intimacies. It is Wednesday, January 22nd. At the time of me sitting down and recording this, it is 9:01 a.m. Perhaps it is morning for you too, and if so, good morning. I hope that you've been able to heave yourself out of bed, and if not, then I hope you allow yourself to remain in bed for a little longer and be permissive and forgiving toward yourself about that, because some days we need to lounge around within our beds, if it is indeed possible, for a little longer than usual. In general, I would self-identify as a morning person, in that when I do heave myself out of bed and resist the fetal sea cucumber position for too many hours, then I can easily feel in high spirits, especially if I'm getting up around 6 or 7 in the morning, or most especially if I manage to get up at 4 or 5, which happens exceptionally rarely these days. I was actually in a good habit of waking up around 5 this time last year, where I had started an antidepressant that was finally working for me, and after a few weeks of true doom as my body learned to adjust to it, I actually started to reap the benefits and entered this far more calm, productive, present and grounded state of being than I have in many a years. And who knows how much of the impact was the antidepressant and how much were other factors, as life is in many ways an experiment where all the factors are never controlled. But yeah, I got onto 25 milligrams of Zoloft, which I must say, whoever manufactures Zoloft, they do such a beautiful job of making it delicious, where naturally I do not eat it, but I do swallow it, and some things that we swallow I find can carry a pretty dégoûtant, aka disgusting, flavor in our mouths. But I just want to, I guess, give credit and celebrate whomever is manufacturing those baby pills of Zoloft, because they are just so tasty and have this, I'd say, almost lightly floral feel to them. And okay, this is not what I was planning to begin the show with, but yes, last year I was in this exceptionally productive state where I would wake up at 5 in the morning and I would do a bit of yoga in my room, and I would try to make contact with the divine, also known as pray or talk aloud a little bit to a god with whom I have a touch and go kind of relationship. I'd say that in the recent month I've been rather avoidant and, I don't know, a bit resistant in saying hello to God. But there are other points, for example, last year or even a couple of months ago, when I feel a very strong tether and sense of support, and even a sense of lightheartedness when trying to reach out to God. And last year I was really feeling that, and all of a sudden I was also seeing angel numbers wherever I went, and every time I would look down on my phone I would always see an angel number, and I just became far more present when it came to small things like eating my meals and listening to some healing sounds while eating my falafel pizza. For example, there's this one artist or music producer named Miracle Tones on Spotify, whom I adore. He has been an auditory or an audio lifeline for me in many moments, and that he just makes these really soothing energy frequencies, and some are for anxiety, some are for liberating the soul, some are for transcending towards more divine frequencies. And it sounds a little bit, I don't know, spiritually fluffy and almost, well, I have the impulse to kind of put it down as silly, but it is not silly, because if you listen to it, you will, I think, also reap the benefits and think, oh my gosh, my nervous system is feeling oh so peaceful. So if you're feeling a little bit of chaos in your body today, or just a sense of emptiness or weight, then I would highly recommend checking out Miracle Tones. I would also highly recommend, if you can, being very gentle with yourself if you decide to stay in bed for longer than you planned. Where the reason why I had jumped into my ultra productive mornings a year ago was because recently that has not been the case at all for me, where in fact I keep making the intention of waking up at 6 in the morning, and I get up, turn off my alarm clock, and then get back into bed, and next thing I know it is 10 or 11, and I hate when that happens, because even though time is relative, and 10 or 11 a.m. could actually be very early and a very fine time to start your day, but some days I just am immediately greeted with this sense of doom and this sense of that it's all over now. I cannot possibly begin my day without confronting the fact that I am a lazy bum. And well, when those thoughts start flooding in, then it just really rains on my morning, it rains on my day, and I think it really sets up the same kind of patterns for the rest of the day of just beating myself up for things that are actually objectively okay, and shaming myself for things that are really not worthy of shame. And so I'm just here to say that if it is morning time for you and it's been hard to get out of bed, then I hope that you acknowledge that you have a human body, and your human body can get very tired, and that we live in a society. We live in a society. Sorry, I can't. I can't say that without cringe. But we do live in a world, especially in these big cities, where we're all just hustling and bustling and running all the time, and constantly trying to fill our lives and like kind of push our own boundaries in terms of work and showing up in relationships and investing in productivity and growth. But I don't know, I think at the end of the day we are also all, well, I don't think I actually really feel this with certainty, that we are all soft-bodied creatures who really are reined by our bodies, and that as good as we become at neglecting our needs and pretending that we don't have them, we still do, and a large part of those needs is incredibly dormant rest and sleep, and sometimes spending an eternity in your bed like a lovely, lazy sea cucumber and feeling absolutely no shame about that, and instead celebrating yourself for being aware and kind and present enough to give yourself that. And some things that have helped me this morning in terms of my own rising and not sea cucumbering has been, well, I realized that making sound oddly has a pretty activating effect on me, in that, so the way this always works is that I hear my alarm, and also last year I invested in this little alarm clock called Lofty, Loftie, and I don't know why I'm promoting antidepressants and energy frequency sounds and alarm clocks, and that wasn't really, again, my objective in coming on here today. But yes, I just want to say that if you're looking for an alarm clock, Lofty is quite fabulous, because, well, I really find their alarm sounds quite musical and soothing, and then I also 24/7 play these Redwoods forest noises, because you can play different kinds of white noise from it, and now it makes my room feel like a mystical, enchanted woodland, which is, of course, I guess, the ultimate ambition of my life is to inhabit a mystical, enchanted woodland, both internally and externally. Anyways, moving on from alarm clock praise, what I was saying was that my mornings begin with me hearing that sound, getting up and in a haze, turning it off, grabbing my phone, getting back into bed and saying, okay, for 5 minutes I will lie here and I will look at my phone and then I will get up. But more often than not, I do not lie there for only 5 minutes. Instead, I either lose myself in my phone for the next 3 hours, or I actually fall back asleep, or a large part of my morning lethargy is my fantasy world and the inevitable, shall I say, horniness of my soft body, in that, yeah, I oftentimes just wake up with this deep craving for cuddling, and also perhaps more erotic stimulation than cuddling too. And what happens is that I'm quite talented in imagining a hunky-dunky cuddling erotic partner next to me, even when there is absolutely no one there except my plush cuddly community. So then for hours, I can spend my morning just staying stationary and imagining someone there and imagining that they're holding me and imagining that they're doing naughty things to me. And I'd say the strangest part of it is that I also rarely take productive action in terms of actually, for example, I don't know why it makes me shy to say this. Well, actually, I do know why. It's pretty naturally a very intimate thing to talk about, but I rarely take action and actually touch myself in the morning and offer myself conclusive satisfactions that I can, you know, move on to the next thing. Instead, I just stay in this state of intense physical longing. And I mean, actually, it has me thinking, because I'm not sure why I don't. I think in some ways that would actually activate my mornings much quicker. But I guess, well, partially it's that I enjoy the longing and the fantasy world and the imagining. So it's less even maybe about the fulfillment of a physical need and more so about tending to my sense of romantic imagination. And I guess somewhat, I don't know, almost edging myself with my own imagination with no horizon of fulfillment. And then partially it's also that I wouldn't say that my relationship with touching myself is exactly submerged in discouraging shame. It's more that I think I go through periods when I hesitate to, because actually going for it can bring up certain memories of being touched by people who are no longer in my life, or it can kind of bring up my general feelings about sex and erotic pleasure and physical intimacy. And as you might know, I've had a pretty rocky journey and all of that. And so, yeah, and so sometimes I hesitate and perhaps also it's less, or maybe this is very much to do with shame, but sometimes I also shy from touching myself because it can feel almost too self-indulgent, even though, like, firstly, what does that mean? And secondly, if we are going to argue that something's self-indulgent, then lying around in bed like a sea cucumber and tending to my fantasy world could arguably be just as self-indulgent. And again, what in the world even is this self-indulgence we oftentimes talk of? But yeah, and then another reason is also because I haven't quite figured out how to touch myself, actually. Like, I'm just laughing because these are not the things that I came in planning to talk about, and now they're all spilling out, and for you it might be morning and maybe you don't want to be hearing about my difficulties with touching myself at this hour. But to finish off this subject matter, what I was saying was that that I'm still learning how to, and that I have had to seek refuge far more in toys and, unfortunately, pornography far more than my own hands. And yeah, I think it's also something that I find myself hoping that a future partner will help me through and help me learn with them. And I don't know, I wonder why that is, because I guess at the end of the day, it is quite literally within my own hands and very possible, and will also probably help me enjoy physical intimacy with partners much more easily if I figure out how to get there myself. Yeah, but in general, I find that my physical cravings, well, yes, I can be, yes, for sure, a horny creature quite often, perhaps even daily. But my strongest, fiercest physical longing is always for being held and for intense devotional cuddling. And so when I'm in sea cucumber state in the mornings, that is usually what I'm pretending at, and usually what's getting in the way of me getting my butt to the bathroom and getting my day started. But this morning, what helped me get up, as I was saying a long, long time ago, was that, oh yes, I made some sounds. And I was talking about sounds a little last episode, in that I feel like in the last year and a half, I've come to appreciate sound in a way that I haven't before, as this fundamental creative impulse and something that is very easily accessible to us all, but that many of us actually shy from using. And last year I was in an acting program for a year specifically. It was a program for the Meisner technique, and we were also taking different auxiliary classes, and some of those were, for example, voice and movement, and the entire program was just really foregrounding the body. Oh God, as you can hear, my voice is getting all breathy and frail, and I fear I might have to do a terrible coffee in order to reassert my more powerful way of expression. Okay, I'm gonna do it. Okay, here I am again. Oh, what I was talking about was sound, and how in my acting program they really foregrounded the importance of the body when it comes to expression, and how expression it is a full body experience, and that many of us are actually quite alienated from ourselves physically, and that our voices, for example, can really be obstructed by not only physical tension, but by psychic tension, and physical tension that is formed by psychic trauma. Like a lot of our childhood wounding, for example, even if you feel like you have lived a relatively easy life, whatever that means, then we all carry a lot of pain that we've inherited generationally and through inhabited, conditioned existence, and that pain can live as tension in different parts of our bodies, and that's kind of a way that our bodies protect us from feeling that, because, well, as creatures, we're not usually all that interested in pain, and sometimes we fear that we will not be able to manage it if we actually experience the full force of whatever is hurting us. And so our voices, for example, really form around those wounds, and that while we all might associate or understand our voice as just more of this static thing and like just something that you are born into and like a marker of your unique identity, we all actually have a very impressively wide range when it comes to voice, and some qualities to your voice might actually not be authentic to your self-expression, but more so coming from trauma. For example, we would talk about how a lot of us these days, we, when it comes to our posture, like posture is something that naturally affects the body and the voice and our our capacity to express ourselves, and also even things like our, just the way that we move through the world, physically and psychically, and our postures. Something that was pointed out to us in this class was that for many of us, we have some misalignment in terms of our heads being, I guess, far more extended forward than the rest of our bodies and like kind of jutting out, and that a part of that is the fact that we have been conditioned into a world that really values thinking and even like privileges that over feeling, and that a lot of us are constantly trying to rationalize things somewhat as a protective measure against, again, the full force of our feelings, and that a posture alignment that would actually be more, well, firstly more balanced, but also more conducive to freedom and expression is one where your head is no longer jutting forward, and instead, you know, it's aligned with your spine, but then the part of you that's left most open is your heart and your chest, and that part for a lot of us is physically more sunken in to our bodies, and that was the case for me, and I didn't even realize. I thought that I had relatively great posture, and then I realized that while my back might be straight, my chest was actually really cave-like, and I guess just sloping inward, and that was very much evidence to how I have retreated in the last, not even the last few years, but maybe even that within like the last 8 years, I've had this gradual shying away from being particularly assertive or expressive or even just loud in social spaces or just taking up space. Like those things have become pretty difficult for me because I think a part of me misinterpreted that the parts of me that were like that when I was younger were actually wrong, and that those parts risked me alienating myself from people, and that that when I embody those qualities that I might be too much in a way that is not tolerated or not desired by others. And so in the last few years, I've understood myself more through this lens of like being soft-spoken and being a good listener and creating a lot of space for others. And while all those things are lovely things on their own, I also have learned over the last year and a half that those things have actually been real obstacles for me when it comes to, well, forming healthy, fulfilling, freeing relationships, and also in my relationship with myself and in freeing myself to be my most authentically expressive and daring and alive version of myself that I can be. So that has been a very big lesson that I've been taking baby steps in and still definitely struggle with. And I think a big part of why I found so much of this kind of life-saving sustenance when I started to make episodes here was because this space, similarly to writing for me, just offers quite literally like boundless space, and this private space where I don't have to consider anybody else's feelings or thoughts and not be constantly like privileging the other person's experience over my own. And I think a few years ago I really got into this pattern of just really struggling to take up space even in the most intimate relationships. And for example, like really trying to constantly ask so many questions to the other person that I'm talking to and like offer support and listening and tending to certain feelings that came up. But then when the questions would flip and it would kind of be my turn to receive, I would oftentimes feel this, and I still do, I'm trying to learn to let go of this, but I can easily feel this self-imposed timer going off of like, okay, I cannot be talking about myself for too long. I have to make sure that like, now that if they're giving me this space, I have to like do double to return the favor. And it's just like, in some ways it seems like a small thing, but then when you realize that you're partaking in this kind of dynamic in many of your relationships, then it can become to feel very crushing, and in a way that you don't even explicitly recognize. And for example, at the end of college, I was having a hard time my senior year, and I would feel this strange alienation where, like, even though I had such lovely giving friendships in my life and these relationships that I understood as very intimate, whenever I would be having a hard time, I wouldn't always know who to turn to. And it wouldn't even be because I was friends with people who didn't want to like help take care of me. That's not the case at all. In fact, I feel like I have so many naturally caretaking individuals in my life for whom I'm really grateful for, but then there's still this part of myself that really struggles to allow that and to engage in relationships that are more reciprocal rather than one-sided, and to actually like go to people when I need to be listened to and let myself take up that space without feeling shame and guilt that I might be too self-involved or flooding the space with my feelings, or that I somehow risk being abandoned if I'm not only giving all the time. And so, yeah, that is something that I've been slowly working on little by little. And I really don't remember how I got into this. But I think it was a good thing to touch on. I think I was talking about my mornings, and I was talking about fantasy world, and then I was talking about making sounds. Oh, okay, now I can track the trajectory. What I've been trying to say is that making sound in the mornings seems to strangely help me. And by making sounds, I mean, firstly, just welcoming a sense of weirdness and playfulness when I wake up, and you know, turning off my alarm clock and then starting to make alien noises like, I don't want to go, I don't want to, and just, or starting to talk to myself in my bed, whether it's because I saw something on the news or whether it's again, just echoing how I'm feeling, and allowing that to not only be expressive, but sometimes take very just objectively weird performative heights, for whatever reason, can feel really activating for myself and help me actually physically get out of bed. So yes, if you need a tool to try out, I would recommend it. I'm putting on your own one-person shows in the morning. And other than that, well, the thing that I actually was planning to start with was talking about breakfast, because I had just had my breakfast, and instead I started off with mentions of masturbation and my antidepressants. And you know what? That's okay. This is intimate content. This is what I am here to talk about. Hopefully this is what you might find value in listening to. But when it comes to breakfast, I hope that today you have had a delicious breakfast. And I know that everybody's bodies function very differently and actually feel good within different contexts. And for example, my sister, she gets really nauseous in the mornings and doesn't like to eat much. But for myself, for example, I've learned that I really do need a breakfast. And for many years, I was in this pattern of just completely neglecting that part of my day and rushing out. And one of the dangers for that for myself, I've learned, is that, well, when I don't eat in the morning, then it can sometimes incentivize me to not eat later too, because firstly, when I haven't eaten too long, sometimes I get ravenously hungry, but other times I can start to feel a bit, I don't know, distanced and almost disembodied from the experience of eating. And also, as somebody who has definitely struggled with bouts of disordered eating throughout my life, I find that when I unintentionally forget to have certain meals, and when I go through a day of just eating very little, or even a few weeks of eating less than usual, or perhaps what's best, even if that initial happening was not at all intentional, but more a case of just forgetting, or like failing to make time for it, or just not feeling as hungry, it can easily evolve into thoughts of, oh, well, maybe this is actually great, and maybe I should try to maintain this. And easily reach for these thoughts that that will actually most certainly harm me, and make me feel, firstly, on a physical level, just really weak, and secondly, on a psychic level, really unsteady. So I've realized that just regular meals for myself are essential, and that breakfast in some ways is my favorite, also because it can be such a comforting moment. And I've learned that, oh my god, I don't know if you heard, but I did. I have to confess, I moved away for a moment to deliver a silent burp, and I hope you didn't hear it. But I could not go on with a clean conscience without confessing. But back to breakfast. I was talking about how, for myself, I've learned that something warm is so significant in starting my morning, and that Last year, for example, I was going through this period again of like remarkably high productivity and just these like very zen present moments of making contact with God and being up at 5 a.m. And I started to get into the routine of making porridge for myself and putting also turmeric and cardamom and cinnamon into my porridge, and it would just be so delicious. And in the middle of winter, I realized just how heartening that is for me and how it makes me feel much more, well, much more strong and mentally balanced throughout my day. And now I'm actually no longer eating that delicious porridge because I find that I think I overate it a bit. So maybe it'll be a while until I reach for that recipe again. This morning I had, what did I have? Oh, I had some tea and toast, where I realized that something about tea and toast, it really makes me think of, I don't know, of London. And when I was younger, between 8 and 14, I actually lived in London. My family had moved there from Kazakhstan, and it's a part of my life that I have been thinking about more now than I have in the last like 8 years. And I realize I actually have a strong emotional attachment to that time, and that there's a lot of comfort that I find in reaching for these minute details and memories of my time in London. And yeah, just something like tea and toast really makes me think of that. And so this morning, starting my day with something kind of nostalgically familiar like that, yeah, just kind of lifted my spirits even further. And I also have been really into cottage cheese recently, where that I think is also another kind of homage to my past and my childhood, because as I said, I am from Kazakhstan, and there we eat a lot of, I guess, like post-Soviet country shared foods like cottage cheese. In Russian, we call it tvorog. And when I was little, I don't think I even really loved it all that much, but in recent years, it's been having a resurgence in my life, and I love it in a little bowl with lots of honey, or today I had it on toast with some butter and some cottage cheese and some orange marmalade on top, and it was just truly divine. I would super recommend it. And I had my Earl Grey tea, and I feel like I say my and's weird. I say, because I could say and, but that sounds, I don't know, kind of inauthentic and almost Britishly performative. And what else did I have? Oh my gosh, I had a yogurt, because I also, one thing you should know about me is that I am a yogurt aficionado. I don't even know if I'm using that term correctly, but what I want to say is that I'm just addicted, super die hard for yogurt. And well, that somewhat extends to many dairy products. I've realized I am just a full-on dairy consumer, and that that one of the reasons why veganism is definitely daunting for me, and I have gone through bouts of trying it, is I realized not even because of meat, but because of dairy, because I really rely on dairy in my diet. And that is to say, though, I really do try to cut down on my meat intake, and I don't eat any beef or lamb or larger animals, and I do eat chicken and fish. I don't know why I felt the need to explain that. I just hope that my mention of veganism and the fact that it's difficult for me didn't come across as me saying nay to veganism, because actually I think it is absolutely fantastic and I super respect anybody who's able to maintain that lifestyle. Okay. Now that I've delivered my loving disclaimer to the vegan community, what I was saying is that I love yogurt, and also I love kefir, which is kind of like drinkable yogurt or like fermented milk, and it's another thing that I grew up with. And this morning I had a La Fermière yogurt, and they always come in the most gorgeous little ceramic, not tubs, like I guess you could even call it a cup, a tin, no, not a tin, a pot, in these tiny ceramic pots. And if you are familiar with La Fermière, I strongly encourage you to go out into the world and find yourself a jasmine-flavored La Fermière yogurt, because, oh my gosh, this morning I had it and I literally, again, erupted in sound of just like, oh my god, this is absolutely divine. So, now that I've given you a full detailing of my breakfast this morning, I just want to say that I hope you listen to your body today and give it what it needs and craves. And sometimes what we need in the morning is actually just a small portion of physical comfort and warmth. And food, I've learned, has such a large role in determining my emotional states. And as someone who's really struggled with my mental health throughout the years, I have learned that a lot of my suffering in the past could have been alleviated with more compassionate eating habits for myself. Yeah, so today I just hope that you're able to offer yourself compassion in this one small way. And yeah, this is, I managed to ramble and ramble today, but I guess that is far better than me sitting here not knowing what to talk about. And I think it is about time to wrap up today's breakfast show. Oh, okay, I do want to mention that I have developed a new crush. Oh my gosh, where I, a few weeks ago I came across Greg James, who is actually like a pretty exceptionally well-known figure, particularly in Britain, because he is a radio host for BBC and does like a breakfast show for Radio 1, and I think does other content, and is just kind of a cultural media figure. And I just adore him. I've learned where I followed him on Instagram, though I'm technically off Instagram, but on my siblings only private burner account I followed him. And he is just absolutely so charming, and he is in fact happily married, so I cannot fancy him too hard. But I just want to say today that, oh my gosh, so handsome and so charming, and listening to him just completely makes my day and makes me blush. And that is another part of what helped me get out of bed this morning, where in therapy, for example, my therapist and I, we talk about co-regulation and how sometimes the reason why you're being a sea cucumber, or the reason why you're like doom scrolling or losing all your time on dating apps, is not because you were being a lazy sack of depraved values and lack of will. No, not at all. You're actually pretty wonderful, but because in that moment you're already outside of your window of tolerance, and that what you need is actually co-regulation, and that you need human contact, you need someone else to come in and help you. I guess, get in contact with your own nervous system again and the present and pull you away from whatever you're lost in. And I find that radio and podcasts can actually, and even just music, can be really helpful for me in that. And I also am not really like a podcast devourer, as many people are, partially because I love music so much, and usually on my walks and trains or in my room, I'm completely seduced by music. But then partially also because sometimes a constant influx of knowledge can somewhat overwhelm me. But this morning, listening to the breakfast show with Greg James, that was actually really enlivening and super funny, and yeah, just made me start off the day with some laughs. And I think served the role of being this co-regulating energy for me and making me feel like there are these other people in my room with such bright, positively infectious personalities. So I would recommend checking that out. I think you can listen to it on BBC Sounds, an app that plays specifically BBC content. And oh, speaking of crushes, I am also going on a date today, a first date. I haven't gotten a date in a few weeks, and partially because I decided that I'm actually going to stop, and I'm going to stop for the entire year, and there are no more dates for me, and I deleted my Hinge account once again for quite literally the 12th billionth time, where when I delete it, I also don't just delete the app, I delete the account. So I have recreated my account 12 billion times because I usually have very strong reactions and impulses. And when I start to feel discouraged or overwhelmed, I easily can get this behind this intention of, oh, I'm disappearing from this world forever, and I'm gonna become a monk in the enchanted woodland forest and not think of my dating life again. And then that lasts for a couple of days, and I realize, oh God, no. My soul's truest longing is romantic connection, and I want to be brave, and I want to stay hopeful, and I'm also just curious and impulsively completely entangled with this app. So unless someone deletes it from the app store, unfortunately, we seem to share a path, me and Hinge. But yeah, tonight I have a date. First date, it'll be just a drink. I intend to not drink though, because I have learned that I actually don't like to drink on the first date, and that usually, well, like since the beginning of time of dating as an adult, whenever I'd get drinks with someone, naturally I would drink. And I realized that it can just easily make me feel out of control, and not in a way where I necessarily always partake in externally reckless behavior, but more just internally. It can shift my moods more easily and make me take any kind of disappointment more heavily. It can, I don't know, I guess it can make it harder for me to see things as clearly. And so on the first date, I've realized I don't want to drink, at least tonight I don't want to drink. You know, things always change, but yeah, and a big part of that is also because I am actively trying to change my patterns when it comes to dating, and I know that what I want is actually very clear to me, and that I do really want a relationship, and I want to grow with someone, and I want that intimacy to be a good catalyst for positive transformation and deep meaning and magic. And that it means, these things mean that I have to encourage myself to approach dating more intentionally, and also just be, again, compassionate with myself and receptive of what I need. And as somebody who feels easily very vulnerable in that part of my life and just, again, has a billion karmic lessons to learn and just can easily feel so much crushing anxiety and longing and discouragement in dating, I've realized one small thing that can help me stay brave within those feelings and regulate amid them is not drinking on the first date. So hopefully they have a tasty Coca-Cola or sparkling water. I really love sparkling water. And to finish off, I will indeed read a poem, though this is getting a little bit lengthy. So instead of reading the poem that I intended to, because that's a long poem, I'm gonna find another poem very quickly and tell you that one. But yes, I'm flipping the pages. Oh, actually, now I remembered. There were two poems I wanted to read, and I will still read the other one. It is from a collection called Survie by Yuna Kwok. And I actually am entirely unfamiliar with this poet, but I discovered this collection because at my creative writing program in our writer's house, once in the kitchen there was this box of books that said, "Please take me." And I took one of the books, and this was that book, and it immediately enchanted me because, well, I am not quite sure what is going on in these poems, but they are so exciting when it comes to language, and especially when it comes to sound. And I keep talking about sound, so that seems actually very appropriate. And I have not made it through this collection, and I actually haven't picked it up in a while. So this is kind of a random pick, but one of my favorite animals are deer, and the title is Feeding Deer. Okay. Feeding Deer. Your largesse was honed to logical dispersals, one handful nut, one sorrel, to the deer peering, beech nuzzled, to your hand wintergreened and giving, young tips of yellow birch splayed dimpling in beseech, to when beech burned, you extracted sticky marrow for a deer to swallow. Now pace without to pluck the drooping pears whose heavy bellies wanting to be plucked, now the finch is fallow. I am foregrade limbs uncordial, uncongenial. I am palms aslant, empty of feed. How am I to do? We were as blanket and thread and could not part but to unravel. What deer do with epidemic hunger? How deer eat to exhaust meat's auger. Oh my gosh, that was just fantastic. One thing I get self-conscious about when reading poetry is naturally pronunciation, because of course that can really impact rhythm, and I feel like I also generally can definitely have a bit of an odd pronunciation when it comes to words, and somewhat of an odd fluctuating accent also. Generally I actually believe in full freedom when it comes to pronouncing words, and I always find it very exciting when somebody offers me a word in a way that I haven't ever heard it before. Yeah, and with that, I think it is indeed time to wrap up. There are many sirens outside, so I hope that is not too disturbing. Perhaps you can't even hear them, but thank you so much for listening. I love you. I love you very much, and I hope that you have a really lovely day, and that you are very compassionate with yourself and again that you eat delicious things, and I will talk to you very soon. My name is Daria Alara, and you've been listening to Intimacies.